Satan's children is the alternative. Day and night thy hand was heavy upon me. Now again, take the opposite. I acknowledge my sin unto thee, and mine iniquity have I not hid. Then the psalmist goes yet further back to show how quickly God answered and how quickly God acted. Whereas the psalmist did acknowledge the sin and ceased to hide the iniquity, God did not wait. Like Psalm 37, where when you commit your way to Him, the Lord worketh. Even before you get around to resting and waiting patiently. Again, God did not wait for the actual acknowledgement, but in the moment when the psalmist decided he would do so, God met him. I said, reading from the psalm, I will confess my transgression unto the Lord, and thou forgavest the iniquity of my sin. I said I would do it. The moment I made up my mind, thou didst act. That is a true picture of God. Some child of God may be burdened with sin, sin persisted in. If such a one at this moment will say, I will confess my sin, then in the moment in which the heart has taken the attitude, taken just the attitude of confession, God will forgive the iniquity of the sin. How truly the prophet described him as, quote, a God ready to pardon. Oh, for some figure of speech to help men understand the meaning of that ready to pardon. He's so ready to pardon that when man makes up his mind to confess, he's forgiven before he does the confessing. God does not wait for your formalities. He deals with your attitudes. He doesn't wait until the Sabbath day comes around. He doesn't wait until a human confessional is open. He doesn't wait until a special inquiry meeting is called, or until a special inquiry meeting is called at the end of the service. He doesn't wait for an hour. This is not ancient history. It's present fact. At this moment, without sigh or sound that mortal ear can detect, or attitude that the eye of man can observe, even before the thing is said, when I make up my mind to quit arguing that my evil is not evil, that my sin has a reason or an explanation, or that there's some measure of innocence, and that I haven't sinned against God, when I quit arguing, quit using guile, quit covering, at this moment, without sigh or sound that mortal ear can detect, or attitude that the eye of man can observe, even before the thing is said, when I make up my mind to confess, thou forgavest the iniquity of my sin. You wonder that when this man was going to write a psalm about this matter, he had to begin, oh, the blessings of transgression forgiven and sin covered. In the moment in which a man ceases guile and makes his soul naked in the eyes of God, he is forgiven. God, in an awe-inspiring mystery, respects the veil that a man tries to fling over himself and excludes from communion with the man until the man tears the veil and says, I'm going to be before God what I really am, when in that moment God makes him what he would have the man to be. Thou forgavest the iniquity of my sin. Then follows the matters of sorrow and silence. For this let everyone that is godly pray. For this means, because of this, or for this cause, doesn't mean we're to pray for forgiveness. There's no need to do that. All we have to do to obtain forgiveness is to quit hypocrisy, to make our souls naked and face it and confess it to God. So it's not that we're to pray for forgiveness, but because of it. The question of sin and sorrow are intimately related, and the place of prayer is thus guarded. It is only when a man is guileless before God, not covering his sin before God, and sin is dealt with by God, that he has free access to the place of prayer. Quit praying while you're still covering your sin. Quit asking for forgiveness. This starts the minute you rip the veil of guile, self-deceit, and hypocrisy away. Having that access, a man finds that the way of prayer is the way of deliverance in sorrow. Surely, the psalm says, when the great waters overflow, they shall not reach unto him. That's an apparent contradiction. When the great waters overflow, they shall not reach him. That's a paradox indeed. It is a picture of a man in the middle of overflowing waters. But the waters do not reach him. The same thought is in the next figure. Thou art my hiding place. Thou shalt preserve me from trouble. Not keep me from going into trouble, but preserve me from it when I'm in it. Thou wilt compass me about with songs of deliverance. Not keep me from going into prison. Nor even necessarily bring me out of prison. But enable me to sing in prison. The psalmist doesn't declare that the godly man is to be immune from sorrow, but that he is to be triumphant over it, that sorrows are not to be allowed to overflow him, harm him. Great waves and billows will overflow so that the godly man could perfectly say, all thy waves and thy billows have gone over me, oh, the waves and the billows that have gone over our heads, floods of great waters, and yet even though at the moment we felt as though we were about to be drowned, we were not drowned. The great waters have not reached, they've not harmed, they've not destroyed us because we had access to God by prayer and sin was dealt with. We prayed to Him in the time when the proud waters went over our souls and we were delivered. Thou art my hiding place. Thou wilt preserve me from trouble. You know what it is literally? Thou wilt preserve me in a tight place. Oh yes, we may often be in a tight place, but we shall be preserved. For nearer to us than all the pressure of circumstance is God Himself. And though circumstances press until we think we shall be ground to powder, we never are, because the resistance of God against the pressure of circumstances keeps us safe. And yet again, thou wilt compass me about with songs of deliverance. Such songs are sung in prison. You know the New Testament illustration. Paul and Silas at midnight. They didn't sing praises after they got out of prison. Not after the earthquake that shook their feet loose from the stocks. They sang with feet fast in the stocks, with back sore from Philippian rods. The psalmist knew sorrows. Knew the sweeping of the storm, rolling of the waters, loneliness of the prison house, but he knew deliverance. He knew a hiding place in which he was safe, and therefore he could sing in the midst of the sorrowful hours. All this is yours and mine. If we quit playing with God, quit arguing with God, quit covering our sin. Then he passed to the matter of silence. Now he seems to have been so full of the consciousness of God that he adopts the language of God, changes the method of his speech, and in the psalm does not sing of God, but wrote as though God were singing to him. This is your portion as you matriculate through honest facing of your sin, prayer for God to lead you through whatever you face. I will instruct thee. Teach thee in the way which thou shalt go. I will counsel thee with mine eye upon thee. Be ye not as the horse or as the mule, which have no understanding, whose trappings must be bit and bridle to hold them in, else they will not come near unto thee. Many sorrows shall be to the wicked, but he that trusteth in the Lord, mercy shall compass him about. Let me leave Morgan for a minute because I may know more about horses than he does. Dumb animals. Why do you have a bridle and bit? To make the horse respond to the will of another. Bridle and bit's not what you would offer to a baby as a pacifier. And says, mule. You'll see a mule bit. And God is saying to those that have passed through facing their sins and recognizing against Thee, O God, have I sinned. And pray for God to lead them through the troubled waters that their own, the fact of sin may have gotten you in a mess. Don't be like a horse or a mule that has no understanding. That the rest of your life, God's got to deal with you like trainers deal with a horse and a mule, with bridle and bit. Trust in the Lord. Hang your body on His Word. Eagerly go back to Bethel, the tent and the altar. Quit trying to talk God into your way. Some horses never make it. You got to be riding that bit and bridle every minute you're on them. Others, just a little nudge. We shouldn't need a bit and bridle at all. Knowing that God has forgiven our sins, we should throw ourselves into His pathway. What wonder then that the psalmist finished as he did? Be glad in the Lord and rejoice. Shout for joy, all ye that are upright in heart. When men really know God, they become full of gladness because of His grace. And that one that would forgive us, that knows our deepest thoughts, from whom we can hide none of our evil, will forgive us and impute not iniquity when we quit lying to Him. And you know, when you quit lying to Him, you've got to quit the sin you've been lying about. And one who would forgive us, who gave His Son for that, and His Son who bore our sins in His body. You better love Him and trust Him. Not crucify Him afresh, with our own succumbing to the flesh. I want God to use less and less bit and bridle on me in the years ahead. I hope you make the same choice. I'll be on telephone.